This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, November 7th, 1876, a group of men enter a tomb in Springfield, Illinois to steal the body of one Abraham Lincoln, who had been assassinated about a decade or so earlier. This plot to steal Lincoln's body was put together by a group of Chicago area counterfeiters who were hoping to use the body as ransom to free one of their colleagues who had been arrested for counterfeiting earlier that year. Did this plan work? Listener, I will tell you that this plan did not work. And one way you know that it didn't work is because you probably would have heard of this story had Lincoln's body actually been stolen. But most of us have not heard of this story, so let's fix that. Let's hear about it because it is a very interesting story and scheme. So here to discuss, as always, are Nicole Hemmer of Columbia and Kelly Carter Jackson of Wellesley. Hello there.
Hello, Jody.
Hey there.
So, Kelly, I guess one question here is, it's 11 years after Lincoln has been assassinated. Mm-hmm. This attempt to steal his body, do we think of this as a politically motivated act, or is it something else?
You know, it's a little bit of both, I would say. It's political in that, you know, Lincoln still is probably one of the most beloved presidents, well, at least by Northerners at this time. And the fact that he, you know, was assassinated, there's just so much of a powerful and visceral memory that is tied to Abraham Lincoln. So using him as a specific target, capturing his body to use it as ransom, I think is a pretty powerful weapon in the way that people have thought about Lincoln and Lincoln's legacy. I can't think of someone at the time that might have a greater profile. Certainly someone who's no longer living that they might have access to their body for. But at the end of the day, I think this is really just about making money and getting, concocting some sort of scheme that will enable them to get the $200,000 ransom prize that they want to secure the release of Benjamin Boyd, who is this counterfeiter who's been locked up by Chicago police. And so this scheme really is not so much about Lincoln and more so about getting this criminal out of prison.
Yeah, I feel like scheme is the operative word here because every beat of this story is just this gang of criminals running around trying to figure out how to continue on this counterfeiting ring that they have created. And Boyd is key to this because Boyd is known as one of the best engravers. He makes these counterfeit plates that are really effective. He's very good at it, and it's very difficult to detect that the bills that he is counterfeiting aren't real. And so he's known to do this counterfeiting, but he gets away with it for a pretty long time.
And this is one of the interesting wrinkles for this very harebrained scheme, which is they want to steal Lincoln's body, hold it ransom to get Boyd out. Okay, fine, I get it. Like, release someone in exchange for this other thing. But then they are also asking for $200,000 ahead of that. But I'm like, you're counterfeiters. Just make it. but I suppose it's like, just get the, you can make $200,000 if you're that good.
They gotta mix in the good with the bad.
I suppose,
that's right.
But it also might be that, like, oh, our main guy is behind bars. So, like, we're not going to be able to counterfeit the $200,000 because the only person who could do that for us is a real catch 22 here. But I just love the idea that they're asking for money when, like, the whole point of this is that you can make fake money. But
they just wanted to go back on the straight and narrow. This was their way back to a moral path.
Right.
Got to have your clean money and your dirty money.
Exactly. And it would have been wonderful if the Secret Service had, like, obviously, the scheme doesn't go this far because it gets botched. We'll talk about that in a second. But it would have been a wonderful play by the Secret Service to, like, give them counterfeit $200,000 and really call them. Yeah. But before we get into why this is botched and how harebrained this truly is, you know, I do want to linger on this idea that like 11 years after Lincoln's death, if you're sitting around coming up with a scheme, it's still the most kind of salient thing to target Abraham Lincoln's body. I mean, because again, this much of this is not making a statement about Lincoln himself. This is just what is going to be the most effective thing that will get us leverage in a ransom negotiation. Mm-hmm. And so to think that it's still Lincoln and his body, you know, I think just says a lot. I mean, obviously it's Abraham Lincoln, but you could think that there's a million other ransom schemes that they could have come up with. That said, it also, I think, ties into a larger, how should we put it, a larger milieu of body snatching that seems to be going on in this era.
Yeah, the cadaver trade is a big deal. You know, this is talked about a lot in Dinah Mimi Berry's book, The Price for the Pound of Flesh, in which a lot of enslaved people's bodies were never given the proper rest, shall we say, after they died. That medical students were notorious for stealing cadavers and going into grave sites and digging up dead bodies and using those bodies for medical research and to practice on them in medical schools. And so a lot of families, you know, when they died, they didn't want their loved ones to be experimented on or cut up. And so it was really hard to get people to release bodies to medical schools. And so one of the ways they did that was by using enslaved people's bodies because they knew there would be very little pushback. But some people do go to great lengths to protect their loved ones near their cemetery, burying them on their property to ensure that people won't steal their bodies.
And there's also in, you know, this had been going on for a long time. In 1788 in New York City, there are these resurrection riots where, you know, people find out that graves are being robbed and they're furious and they attack the medical school where this is happening and they start to burn down the places where these cadavers are being kept. It happens again in New Haven in 1824. And you can understand why people are so outraged. There's this incident that actually triggers the riots in 1788 where a medical student who is operating on an arm, there's some kids playing outside and he sticks the cadaver arm out the window and tells one of the kids that it's his mom's arm. His mom had just died. And that that triggers these riots, as you can imagine it would.
Oh my gosh. This gives a whole new meaning to rest in peace. You know, like the idea that these bodies cannot just be undisturbed.
Yeah. And so in this scenario, there's no indication that they're doing this for medical purposes or whatever. But this larger context of grave robbing being something that people have to be worried about gives us an understanding of why, for instance, Lincoln is buried in a 500-pound cedar and lead coffin. You know, the idea that we have to protect bodies and certainly a high profile corpse such as Lincoln's, that's the context here and why he was buried in the way he was. And that, of course, is one of the key elements into why this scheme goes so poorly. So we've just painted a picture of a world in which there are people who know how to rob graves floating around. None of these people involved in this scheme are qualified grave robbers, problem number one. And problem number two, this body is buried in a very, very heavy coffin. So take us to the night of and tell us how this goes wrong.
So basically, Hughes and Mullen, as you mentioned, don't have any robbing experience, grave robbing experience. And so they tap this man by the name of Louis Swiggles. I hope I'm saying his name right, Swiggles, which is that's a fun last name. Anyways, Swiggles happens to be a Secret Service informant. And so basically, Swiggles reports this tip to a man by the name of Patrick Tile, who's the chief of the Chicago District Office of the Secret Service. And basically, they get Robert T. Lincoln, Lincoln's son, surviving son, into this plot to basically say, like, hey, let's hatch a plan to foil these robbers. We're going to try and steal, you know, Lincoln's body. And that's exactly what happens on the night of the theft. These men come together and, you know, Swiggles is waiting for the men to show up. They do. And about 2 hours later, inside the tomb chamber, they realize they can't move it. And then all of a sudden they hear a gunshot and they panic and they have no idea what's going on, who fired the gunshot, are they being shot at? And they all pretty much start to run, panic and run and flee the scene.
As you would, right?
But and not just the attempted grave robbers, but the law enforcement also gets spooked because they don't know who fired the shot. Yeah. And so like everyone just scatters, right?
Yeah, the bungling is across the board here because you had all of these Secret Service agents who were in charge of catching counterfeiters who were circling the grave. They know everything that's about to go down. They're just waiting for the signal from Sweggles to go in and catch them in the act. They want to wait until this tomb has been pried open so that they can say, okay, we caught you red-handed. You're going to prison for grave robbing. But they completely bungle it. They have them surrounded, and yet somehow still these talented grave robbers manage to get away from all of these Secret Service agents.
And I do want to go back to, like, you know, the week or so before this happens, when this informant, the Secret Service informant, Sweggles, who's trying to infiltrate this counterfeiting ring. As we know, the Secret Service is still, for I don't know really why, I've never figured it out, but is in charge of, like, counterfeiting and currency and so forth. But just imagine this person who's an informant who thinks that they're going to, you know, infiltrate and hear about plots to counterfeit money, and then one day one of the people sidles up to him and says, hey, you know, we got this idea to steal Abraham Lincoln's body. And then, like, cut to a week later, they're like crouched in the corner of Lincoln's, you know, tomb, being like, what the crap did I get myself into? Like, you know,
I wanted to do was print some bills.
I love that idea. Everyone in a little bit in over their heads, I would say, in this scenario. So everyone scatters, the thieves go off into the night. Lincoln's body, like, you know, I don't know, clanks to the floor, but is still there. They do get caught eventually, correct?
Yeah, I mean, because the Secret Service knew exactly who they were, it was just a matter of finding them after this. So about 10 or 11 days after, they end up being caught. One of them had already been under indictment and was out on bail for counterfeiting with Boyd. And Mullen and Hughes end up going to prison for a year for grave robbery.
And so what happens to Lincoln's body at this point?
So Lincoln's body now, I mean, honestly, they probably could have left it where it was and it still would have been fine given the 500 pounds that it weighed. But that's not good enough. They didn't want anyone to try to come up with some sort of plot. So immediately after, they take the body and they move it to a shallow, unmarked grave in the tomb's basement, hoping that, you know, no one will know where it was. But that did not feel secure enough. So Robert Lincoln gives permission to exhume the body and then rebury it once more, but in a steel cage in a 10-foot deep vault covered with concrete. And that's where Lincoln's body remains to this day.
I think one of the fascinating parts of this story is, in a way that's different from the other grave robbers or resurrectionists that we've been talking about, Lincoln's body is being treated as a kind of relic, right? That if you're in possession of Lincoln's body, it is worth so much because he is that important to the United States and its history. He is such a legend and almost a saint among many circles in the United States, certainly not in the White South, but otherwise. It's fascinating to think about what this says about his legacy and how important he was perceived as being to the American people.
But do you think that that's changed? I mean, we're not body snatching anymore, but do you just feel like...
I mean, I think that I don't think that people would be happy if his body was stolen at this point. Do I think you could hold it for ransom? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's a morbid thought, or all of this, I guess, is morbid, but, you know, but it's a weird thought. But I was just thinking, like, what would happen if a prominent person's body was stolen today? I mean, I think most of the reaction would be like, that's pretty weird.
Like, yeah, like, why? You know, as opposed what are you to, doing? Why? Yeah. I think people would be more morally and ethically appalled than they would be inclined to, like, you know, come up with money and sort of pay ransom in that way. It just seems like unconscionable to do something like that.
And we should say, you know, as we wrap up, like, this story, interestingly, did not get, as much as we're talking about how sort of significant Lincoln was at the time in the public imagination, it actually didn't get much coverage at the time from what we can tell. And in part because this took place on an election night and there were just other things going on. People's attention was elsewhere. But it really wasn't until those 10 days later when the grave robbers were caught that it got a little bit of press. Does it matter to either of you that Lincoln is still in a 10-foot deep vault covered with concrete? I mean, is there any argument to be made to say bring his body closer to the surface or make it sort of more accessible in whatever way you want to describe now that the fear of snatching is over?
I am surprised that his body's not in Washington, D.C. You know, in my mind, the first impulse I thought was like, oh, isn't he in like Arlington or I don't know, like it. Right. But of course he would be in Springfield, Illinois. But for some reason, I thought more about place than space.
And my reaction is it's just a body. So it's fine that it is where it is. There's probably not a ton of it left.
Yeah.
All right. That brings us to the end of the episode. Nicole Hemmer, thanks to you.
Thank you, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
This Day in Esoteric Political History is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, listener-supported, artist-owned podcasts. Our researcher and producer is Jacob Feldman. Our producer is Brittany Brown. Kala Nakua helps with transcripts. Julie Shapiro is executive producer for Radiotopia. Get in touch with us if you have any questions or comments or ideas for the show. You can email us thisdaypod@gmail.com, or you can find a form at thisdaypod.com where you can also get our full archives, transcripts, and learn lots more about the show. Follow us on social at This Day Pod on Instagram and Twitter, where we are posting stuff each and every day. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Radiotopia.